In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. In the first gospel reading, we heard about the two great commandments, and I've been over time trying to cover the extrapolation of those two great commandments, which are found in the Ten Commandments, the two tables of the law. The first table is the table that deals with loving God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second table of the law is that which deals with loving your neighbor. And so it's not just left up to us to decide what it means to love God or to love our neighbor. The scriptures fill us in on those details and lay out what it means to love God and our neighbor. Today I'd like to talk about the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that was within thy gate. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is therein, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The first thing to note about this commandment is it's not instituting a new commandment, because the Sabbath was instituted at creation. God blessed the seventh day because after the 6 days in which he created all that was in the visible world, on the seventh day we're told that he rested. So he blessed that day and commanded that man would set that seventh day aside as a day of rest and a day that would be dedicated to him. Now, the question that's often asked is, well, you know, the Sabbath was Saturday in the Old Testament, and we don't keep the Sabbath the way that the Jews do, so does this commandment even apply to us? Is it really only 9 of the 10 commandments that we need to be concerned with? Well, the church teaches us that no, as a matter of fact, all 10 commandments really do apply, but the fourth commandment is transformed in the new covenant. As I said, the Sabbath day, Saturday, is the day in which we commemorate the creation of the world, which up to the time of the incarnation of Christ, that was the greatest thing that God had done in the history of the world. But at the resurrection, God chose to rise on the third day, which actually was the first day of the week, Sunday, or the eighth day, as the fathers like to talk about it, because it represents the eternal day. It's the day that steps outside of time. And so Sunday became the day in which we observe this commandment, the day of rest, the day in which we worship. But we don't try to say that Sunday is the Sabbath in the sense that some Protestants and Catholics will talk about the Saturday as if it has no significance for Christians. In Greek, Saturday, and in Russian also, it has a form of the word Sabbath. In Russian, it's subota. In Greek, I believe it's sabbaton. And the name for Sunday in Greek is Kyriaki, which means the Lord's Day, which is a phrase we find in the New Testament itself. And in Russian, it's Voskresenye, the day of the resurrection. So the Sabbath, Subota, is still a special day in the weekly cycle. That's the reason why we never fast strictly on Saturday, with the exception of Holy Saturday. Even on that day, we still don't fast as strictly as we do on other days of the week. But it's a more strict day. That's the only day in which oil is not allowed, although wine is still permitted. Any other Saturday of the year, you're at least allowed to have wine and oil, because Saturday is still the day of creation. And still during Lent, we celebrate the liturgy on Saturday and Sunday, not just on Sunday. Whereas during the week, we are only able to do the pre-sanctified liturgy because of the fast. And so Saturday retains its commemoration, but in the sense of it being the primary day of Christian worship, it's displaced by the day of the Lord, the resurrection. In the Didache, which is the oldest document that we have outside of the New Testament itself, and Didache means teaching. The full title of that book is The Teaching of the 12 Apostles. And even secular scholars recognize it was probably written in the first century, if not maybe the early second century, but definitely either during the lifetime of the apostles or soon thereafter. And so it reflects apostolic tradition. In chapter 14, verse 1, it says, "But every Lord's day Gather yourselves together and break bread and give thanksgiving, or that's a reference to the Eucharist, after having confessed your transgressions, that your sacrifice may be cured. So what exactly does this commandment mean to us? Well, for one thing, you need to understand that the liturgical day is from evening to evening. And so, on Saturday evening, where should we be? We should be in church. We should be here for the vigil. And that's when we begin the Sabbath rest, in which we devote ourselves to prayer and to contemplation of the things of God. And so that's the best way to begin the Sabbath, being here at church, and then Saturday night preparing yourself for Holy Communion after the vigil, and then Sunday morning being here at church and spending time with your brothers and sisters in the Lord, attending Sunday school, having some fellowship after the liturgy with your with the people here in this parish. That's the way we should be doing it. Now, are there exceptions to those rules? Of course, there's always some exceptions. Christ in the Gospel is talking to the Jews who are very strict about the Sabbath, and often in very ridiculous ways in which they were, you know, making people the slaves of the Sabbath. Rather, you know, Christ said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Christ said, for example, you know, if your ox is in the ditch on the Sabbath day, you don't leave the ox in the ditch and let him die there. You go and you get him out of the ditch, even if it's the Sabbath day. Well, there are a lot of things that might come up that might prevent us from being here at church. Some of us have jobs that prevent us from doing that. For example, if you're a police officer, well, I think we all want at least some police officers to be on duty even on Sunday. And so if we're going to ask other people to do that, we can't say, well, it's only non-Orthodox Christians that should do that. So I don't think that it's a sin for an Orthodox Christian to be a police officer, for example, and work on Sunday, or to be a nurse or a doctor. And also, some of us don't have any choice, because the only job that we might be able to get at any given time might require that we have to work Sunday and we have to feed our families, and so we really don't have any choice. And so if you're in a situation like that, obviously, then there's an exception. But the question that we have to ask is if the ox is in the ditch Sunday after Sunday, maybe it's time for us to get a new fence. Maybe it's time for us to keep the ox from getting in the ditch in the first place. If there's any way that we can prevent it from happening, then we should do what we can so that we're able to be here and to worship. And it's even more true during the week when we have feast days, because the church teaches that the idea of keeping the Sabbath also extends to holy days, especially the great feast. And so ideally, we wouldn't be working on one of the 12 great feasts. But many of us have jobs in which it's not very easy for us to get off for as many feasts as we have during the course of the church year. But we should nevertheless try to observe those feasts as well as we can. If we can't be here for the liturgy, let's try to be here for the vigil. If we can't be here for the vigil, let's try to be here for the liturgy. And if we can't be here for either, then maybe at least in your home, do an akathis that relates to the feast, and maybe do typica the morning of the feast, read the scripture readings, but try to observe the feast as best as you can. But for most of us, we can be here if we want to bad enough. And so we really need to do that and to not make excuses for ourselves, if that's what they are. Just look at your own conscience, and we shouldn't look at other people and try to be their consciences for them, because we don't know what goes on in other people's lives. But we should look to ourselves and see, do I have reasons for not being at a particular service, or am I making excuses? We also need to physically rest, and we need to take time to shut out the world, and particularly on Sunday, if we take that time, we're away from all the things of this world, and we're praying, we spend some time reading the scriptures, that gives us a chance to recuperate from all the rest of the week where we're surrounded by so many negative things. In the book of Revelation, in chapter 1, St. John the Apostle said, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. This is one of the references that we find in the New Testament to Christians observing Sunday as the day of worship. But it's important to know that it says he was in the Spirit. He wasn't at the football game. He wasn't, you know, at the movies. He wasn't at the beach. He was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day. And when you're doing those kinds of things, there's absolutely no excuse to miss a service that you can go on, you know, go watch the Texans get beat again or something like that. Be here. and be here and pray, and then you can DVR the game and watch it later. But you don't need to make God take second fiddle to the Texans or to a movie or to anything else that's not nearly as important. Keeping the Sabbath is sort of a tithe of our time. And just like when we don't tithe the gifts that God gives us financially, the scriptures tell us that we're robbing God. If we don't tithe from our time by observing the services of the church, and especially Sunday, we're robbing God of our time. You might ask, well, is this just a bunch of outward legalism? You often hear Protestants that will talk about how that's just a bunch of ritual, that's just a bunch of, you're being legalistic. God doesn't care about all that stuff. I can go out to the woods and go fishing, and I can commune with God in nature, and it's just the same thing, maybe even better, because it's just me and God. Well, these outward things are there for a reason. The tradition of the church has been passed down to us for a very good reason. Father Victor Potapov, commenting on this fourth commandment, mentions a parable by Dostoevsky, the famous Russian author. And he was talking specifically about the growth of Protestant sectarianism in Russia during the 19th century. But it certainly applies to anything that we might encounter today that's along the same vein. He says, they carry a vessel, a very precious liquid. All fall down, all kiss and adore the vessel containing this precious life-giving fluid. And then suddenly people stand up and begin to cry, you blind, why do you kiss this vessel? It is only the life-giving fluid contained in that precious vessel, in that vessel that is precious. Only the content is precious, not the container. But you are kissing the glass, simple glass, and you adore the vessel and glass, ascribing all the holiness to it. And you are forgetting about the precious fluid that it contains. You idol worshippers, throw away the vessel and break it, and adore only the life-giving fluid and not the glass. But what happens when you throw away the glass that contains the precious fluid that they're saying is the important thing? All that seeps into the ground and it disappears. It's these outward things that pass on to us the inward things. And of course, we don't want to just focus on the outward and ignore the inward, but you can't have the inward properly without the outward as well. We need both the outward aspects of our faith and the inward, and not throw out any one thing, because I believe it's in the wisdom of Sirach, it says that he who despises small things will fall little by little. And many of our traditions may seem like a small thing, but you throw away this, you throw away that, and then pretty soon you don't have anything left. Another analogy that St. Irenaeus used in the second century is he talked about a mosaic of a king. And if you take one piece of the mosaic, you can still see the image, but you're missing a piece. You take another piece, you could probably still make it out, but you keep taking away those pieces of the mosaic, and pretty soon you can't make out anything anymore. And he also talked about how heretics take those pieces and rearrange them and make the image of a dog and say, see, it's the same mosaic. Well, no, it's not. So these things are all important, and we need to embrace the traditions that have been passed down to us humbly, because they're there for our salvation.